following program was produced by an independent community producer. The opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of the ECAT staff or board of directors.
Welcome to For the Love of Words. Your host is Priscilla Almquist Olson, also known as Penny, to my best friend in the whole wide world, who's my guest today, poet Johnny Renee Jackson Nelson, also goes by Nia.
Yes.
And she is the most prolific poet of Kwanzaa poetry in the world. And I think there are five or six volumes already, and she keeps going and going, moving on. And anyway, it is the season for Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa starts the day after Christmas, December 26th, and goes for a week. And each day commemorates something that's very important to the African-American community. It's all about harvest and values and so forth. And so we're going to hear that from my best friend, Johnny Renee Jackson Nelson. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I actually go by Johnny Renee Nia Nelson, right? I've finally dropped the Jackson part. Too confusing with the kids. But yeah, hi, Penny. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for doing this and for inviting me back.
Oh, yeah. Well, you were a hit last year.
You think?
Anyway, it's wonderful. And this is the season of joy and happiness, peace, and so forth, even though the world is in the midst of turmoil and chaos and so forth.
War, right? You know, disaster, genocide, all those things.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so tell our audience a little bit about Kwanzaa and why it's so important to you and to the African-American community.
Okay, so Kwanzaa was created in 1966. It grew out of the civil rights struggles, the Black Power movement, and it was created by Dr. Marlana Karenga, a Pan-Africanist who traveled throughout Africa gathering research. And what he found was that all over Africa, they celebrated the harvest, the collection of the fruits and the crops and the veggies. So this holiday is based on that. It's a celebration of the harvest and the fruits of our labor. And it's celebrated for 7 days and seven nights. And it begins December 26th and it goes through January 1st. And there are seven symbols associated with Kwanzaa. It has seven values. It's celebrated for 7 days. There's seven African rituals that are integrated within the celebration. So it's a big deal for us. And Kwanzaa was created to connect us to our African roots and to reaffirm and restore our African values and our African traditions.
Wow. That, in a nutshell, is what else are we going to talk about?
Well, we can break it all down. We can talk about any of it. We can talk about the seven values. I have a poem about that. Or
yeah.
We can talk about the seven symbols. I have poetry about that. Or we could talk about the different rituals that are part of the Kwanzaa celebration, such as the greeting, which is Habari Gani. And that's how I should have greeted you. Habari Gani. That means, what's the news? What's the word of the day? And your response, today is not one of the 7 days of Kwanzaa, so your response today will be Njema. We incorporate Kiswahili because Kiswahili is prevalent throughout many of the countries in Africa, so it's kind of like a universal African language. And so your response will be Njema. And that's like, oh, it's fine. Everything's good. You know how we go, how you doing in America, right? Go fine. Same thing in Kiswahili. But during the time of Kwanzaa, the correct response would be the principle for that day. And each day of Kwanzaa, a different principle is celebrated. The seven principles of Kwanzaa are Umoja. That's the first principle, which means unity. And then Kujichagulia, which is self-determination. Ujima, collective work and responsibility. Ujama, cooperative economics. Nia, which is purpose, Kaumba, which is creativity, and the last value of Kwanzaa is Imani, which means faith, faith in our leaders, faith in ourselves, faith in our ancestors, faith in our values, and in the righteousness of our struggles.
Wow. Thank you, Jay. That was wonderful. So, John and Renee, let's hear some of your poems. But first, I want you to show the instrument that you have with you and how that's integrated into the festival.
Okay, so this, I have a collection of these, actually. And this is a kalimba. That's one of the names for it. It has many names. I don't think you can quite hear, but it sounds like a chime. So I work with California poets in the schools, and I take this African musical instrument into the classroom with me, and the children become quiet, very quiet, because they want to hear the chimes. And I tell them, this instrument will make them an instant musician. Anybody can play it. You know, my grandson Camden can play it. They can play it, you know, so they love it. So I refer to it as a kalimba, but it's also called an indenge or an mbira or a stanza. It has probably 1,000 different names because there are over 1,000 different languages spoken throughout the African continent. But my favorite is kalimba. That word just has a lot of energy to me. So I like to use that. Sorry you can't hear it because it's a beautiful tone.
Okay. So which of the 7 days do you find strikes home to you personally?
Nia. Of course, right? Nia, which is my African name because I wanted to be a woman of high purpose. So, you know, that's just a reminder, you know, stay focused, you know, committed, all those things to keep me on track with what it is that I'm here to do. I'm here to share. I'm here to give. I also like Kaumba a lot, creativity, you know, because that's how I express myself through my creativity and poetry being the main genre of that creativity.
Well, you know, I think one of the basis of our friendship for all these 54 years.
Thank you very much.
is the fact that we both believe in purpose, that we need to have a purpose. We don't retire from life. We just continue and we give and we have a purpose and we try to make the world a better place and bring more understanding to what's happening around us, to other people. And so we've always been like that. We met 54 years ago. We were involved in the civil rights movement, the women's movement, the war against the war in Vietnam and all those movements. And we're still activists, you and I both.
Because there's still a lot of work that needs to be done, you know, without a doubt. Yeah, we'll always be activists. And we'll always work towards making the world a better place because it's who we are.
Yeah. And, you know, some of the things that the goals that we had and the work that we did, we thought, well, we've arrived, we've done it, it's over. No, it's all these evils and problems and chaos keep rising their ugly heads. And so we have to be vigilant. I think it was President John Kennedy who said, democracy requires vigilance. And but anyway, let's get to the poetry. That's what this show is about. It's about for the love of words. And you certainly do have, Johnny Renee, a love of words. So I know you've picked some of your poems to read. How about if you start reading them and maybe give us an introduction as to how this poem happened?
Okay, so the first poem I'm going to recite is called "Come Kwanzaa with Me," and I consider it one of my introductory poems to Kwanzaa. And this was created in 1988. And let me just share that when Kwanzaa was first created, it was not widely celebrated. There was still a lot of negativity associated with everything Kwanzaa or everything African, everything African-American, everything Black, you know? So it wasn't until the broadcasting of the miniseries Roots all of a sudden, everybody went to find out about their African heritage and what is all this voodoo, hoodoo stuff, you know, and make those connections and learn about the nobleness of their ancestry. So this Come Kwanzaa With Me coin is an invitation to Kwanzaa celebrants all over the world to come and share in this experience. Light the candles, beat the drums, pour the libation for Kwanzaa comes. Bring forth the poet, let her speak the message of Kwanzaa, the knowledge we seek. The 7 days of Kwanzaa are the best days of the year. They're filled with love and laughter, with lessons and with cheer. Our house is filled with symbols decorated in the Kwanzaa colors of black, red, and green. A mat, candles, corn, and fruit make up the Kwanzaa scene. Our hearts are filled with pride as we celebrate our own and have faith in a fruitful tomorrow from the Kwanzaa seeds we've sown. Come Kwanzaa with me. Together we'll examine the history of African people struggling to be free from colonialism, apartheid, and slavery. Come Kwanzaa with me. Come experience the wonders of an odyssey ripe with the riches of a legacy embroidered in love, crocheted in dignity. Come Kwanzaa with me. Come enjoy a cultural safari. Rediscover the grandeur of the African race. Come Kwanzaa with me at the Sphinx, Great Zimbabwe, or the Step Pyramids base. Come Kwanzaa with me. Come taste a first fruits delicacy. Come pour the libation that is meant to be both tribute and salute to our ancestry. Let us commune with the legends of our legacy. Hannibal, Nkrumah, Shaka, King, Karenga, Truth, Parks, Malcolm X, and Marcus Garvey. Let us honor our national treasures, ourselves, our children, our elders. Come Kwanzaa with me. Come listen to a tom-tom rhapsody, to a kalimba and a doom-doom symphony. Feel our rhythm, see our vibrancy, an African people in ecstasy. Come Kwanzaa with me. Together we'll create a memory as rich as a canty cloth tapestry. Listen, listen to the drum and come Kwanzaa with me. The high sounds of Kwanzaa, capoeira in the air. They twirl, they twist, they twitch. Dribble, 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 drum beats scurry skyward like a high-flying, rim-rattling LeBron James. Juju rhythms, juba up and juba down, juba up and juba down, sway north, south, west, and east. Audio ambrosia, a feast for our ears. An ox blood red chantu buzzes, sizzles like Louisiana, hot sauce in a pot. Hunted percussion struts with the aplomb of a queen mother. Quela and kalimba chords, somersault spirals, spin and flap, while clapsticks, rain sticks, rhythm sticks, and drumsticks kick it with Zulu speaking beads. The high sounds of Kwanzaa leap and lunge, bend and blend and plunge into the deep velvet night as we delight in the fruit of the drum. Kwanzaa is rich. Rich, rich, rich. Oh, Kwanzaa is so rich. Richer than dot-com gazillionaires. Richer than the tobacco industry. Richer than a camel caravan of African kings and queens crossing the Kalahari. Richer than the sparkling jewels found in the tomb of King Tut. Kwanzaa is rich in tradition, in its heritage and legacy of love, and its prospering principles of unity, self-determination, collective work and responsibility, cooperative economics, purpose, creativity, and faith. Rich like a Toni Morrison novel or an August Wilson play. Rich like a Cynthia St. James painting or a Johnny Renee Neil Nelson poem. Rich, rich, rich. Kwanzaa tastes so rich. As rich as a Jamaican rum drum cake or in Bessie's to die for sweet potato pie. As rich as hand-churned, homemade, name your favorite flavor, ice cream. As rich as the star fruit and the passion fruit which graced the Kwanzaa table. As rich as the elderberry juice which oozes from our ancestors. Rich as the libation that we pour upon sacred soil. Rich, rich, rich. Ooh, Kwanzaa feels so rich. Rich and heavy like Ashanti gold weights. Rich and light like canty cloth woven with threads of gold. Kwanzaa feels rich. Mud cloth rich like clumps of amber awash from the Red Sea. Rich, rich, rich. Kwanzaa sounds so rich. Rich with the resonating rhythms of slit drums, of skin drums, of snare drums, of imperial drums, of the talking drums of Africa, of steel pan drums from the Caribbean. Rich with the hot sounds of Najee and Al Jarreau, Mariah and Whitney and Lauryn Hill, of TLC, Boyz II Men, excuse me, Destiny's Child, and the prophetic words of Karanga. Rich, rich, rich. Oh, Kwanzaa looks so rich. Jewel box rich, like cobalt from the Congo. Malachite from Mombasa, copper from Kitwe, and ivory from the interior. Kwanzaa looks rich, like the Gold Coast of Africa, like its Valley of the Kings, like the icy crown atop Mount Kilimanjaro, like the sparkling diamond mined in South Africa, like the sandalwood scented, Igbo-inspired candles aglow in our Kwanzaa Kinara. Rich, rich, rich. Ah. Oh. Oh, la, 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 la. Kwanzaa is so rich. Kwanzaa is so rich. Kwanzaa is so rich. I have many more, but I have one more that I dedicated. And this one is how I rejoice. How I rejoice in the blackness of Kwanzaa. Midnight black like Mama Africa. Ebony black like our family tree. Basic black like our prospering Kwanzaa principles. Permanent black like the melanin in our membranes. jet black, like a John Johnson publication, pitch black, like our spirituals and our jazz, titanium black, like our precious at-risk youth, velvet black, like you smooth talking brothers, raven black, like our distinguished Tuskegee Airmen, dusty black, like our beloved Buffalo Soldiers, blue black, like a Muddy Waters, Colin Wolf, Coco Taylor, or Big Mama Thornton blues song, burnt black, like our rebellions in Chicago, Memphis, Birmingham, Watts, and Soweto. Obsidian black, like our faith in our future. Oh, how I rejoice in the blackness of Kwanzaa. For it's the blackness of Kwanzaa that makes this holiday a glowing success.
Oh, Gianni Renee, that was wonderful. And I love your deliverance of it. I mean, thank you so much. Okay.
You are so welcome. And thank you, Penny, for this opportunity. I love reciting Kwanzaa poetry, because a lot of my poetry, as you know, is social political. And the writing of Kwanzaa poetry gives me a chance to exhale, to just not take in all the disturbances, noises, and atrocities that are happening in the world, but to celebrate our essence, our being, our history, our traditions, our culture. And I'm so grateful for that, for those opportunities to share that. Just like you have all this pride in sharing your heritage, your Swedish heritage, which you do. So, you know, you do so eloquently. You know, I take pride in sharing what it is that I've been able to glean about my heritage as well.
Yeah. And it's so important, you know, because it's all about our purpose too, is to rejoice, as you say in that poem, rejoice
exactly
about our roots. And so what inspires you to write a poem? Is it the news? Is it your family interactions?
It's everything. It comes from everywhere. Poetry is everywhere. You know, it can come from a conversation. It can come from a jingle on the television. It can come from a line in a song, right? The inspiration is all over the place. And it's just a matter of grabbing it and, you know, for me, I like to reinterpret things, you know, so I hear things one way. I was like, well, how does that connect to this? There it goes. I think I just did that yesterday. And it was this morning. They were talking about something deeply rooted. I'm going, yeah, that's what Kwanzaa is. It's a deeply rooted holiday. Yes, I've got to fly with that. Yeah.
So there's the genesis of another poem.
It really is. And I think it was on a CBS Morning. They just make, you know, go, yeah, I haven't written about deep roots yet. You know, let me do that. Yeah. And so for every volume, I always include a poem about Karenga, the creator of Kwanzaa, you know, as an homage to him. And then I always try to include something about the seven values, which, you know, for me, I practice those values not just during the week of Kwanzaa, but, you know, 7 days a week. So I practice them every week. You know, I just do. I love unity and trying to live in harmony and peace. That's really important. You know, in spite of all the atrocities in the world, you know, we're here to live peacefully together and make the world a better place. So I practice that. Self-determination, not a problem for me. You know, I'm always been my own person. Collective work and responsibility. Yeah. You know, I still try to teach that to those, I call them children, but they're almost middle-aged now, people in my life, my kids, right? You know, collective work and responsibility. That means group. You know, we all need to get involved and pitch in and help out and, you know, and do something, you know, not just for your little circle, but for a larger circle, for the greater good. We're all here to help our sisters and our brothers. And purpose, of course, I've already spoken on that. And Kaumba. Again, that's how I express myself through my creativity, which I absolutely love doing. And then the one that's really important, and I don't speak of it enough, is faith. Because, you know, if we don't have faith in a brighter tomorrow, why do we do what we do? You know, we gotta have faith. We gotta know it's gonna get better. It's gonna be a better place. You know, we're gonna help create that better place, you know, and so will our children and our children's children. You know, we'll always strive to make improvements, to make it better for everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody.
Yeah. You know, all those values you've instilled in your children, they're going to be instilling it in their children. And that's how it goes on and on. We have to have more good in the world than bad. So it flows from one generation to another. Johnny Renee, and I call you Jackson because that was the name that I knew when I met you 54 years ago. That was your family name. I met your parents, your sisters, and it's so sad. They're all gone now, but the memories are there, and the love in our hearts are there for them. So
that's one of the rituals of Kwanzaa. Like I told you about the greeting, Habari Gani. You're responsible to be the principal for that day, you know. But then there's the drum call, which is very universal in Africa, with the drums, and you're summoning the villagers to come. There's going to be a meeting or a celebration or a commemoration, something like that. But there's also the ancestral roll call and the pouring of libation. We pour libation. It's a ritual that's performed throughout Africa, just like here in the United States at an event, a concert or a sporting event or whatever. You know, we'll stand and we'll put our hands over our hearts and say Pledge of Allegiance. If we're in school or if we're at a sporting event, we'll sing the Star Spangled Banner. Well, this is just as much a ritual throughout Africa, this pouring of libation, where we pour wine or water into the earth, you know, and we call out the names of our ancestors and we thank them for their wisdom and their strength and their resilience and their courage and for being exemplary examples for us, and, you know, to guide us to the full fulfillment of our potential. So that's very important, to honor the ancestors and to remember that link and to realize that where we are today, because we're standing on their shoulders, you know, they paved the way for our existence.
Yeah, they surely did. Your poetry resonates. It comes right directly to us because you have been direct with what you want to say. You don't beat it around the bush. You say it the way it, like it is, as we used to say back in the 60s.
Tell it like it is.
And I want to thank you so much for all of that. So what has Kwanzaa meant to you? What would you tell your kids what it means to you so that they can carry on the tradition?
Oh, it's meant so much to me because it just encompasses so much, you know, in terms of values and purpose and creativity and all those values that I hold dear. And again, thank you for sharing these books. I am not a marketing genius by any means. So this was the first one, A Quest for Kwanzaa. I hope you can see it. A Quest for Kwanzaa. It was just a little chapbook, and it was written in 1988. So it has been heralded as the authoritative genesis of Kwanzaa literature because it was the first volume of poetry dedicated to Kwanzaa. And I wrote that because I was a member of African American Writers and Artists here, and I live in beautiful San Diego, right? And as a member of that organization, I was asked by various organizations to come and share Kwanzaa poetry. Well, for me, this was pre-internet, so I couldn't just go in there and find the poetry. And I had a hard time finding it. Light bulb went on and go create the poetry for this holiday. So that was the first book. And then this one, Positive Passage, Everyday Kwanzaa Poems, was the next one. Because I thought that the values of Kwanzaa were so important that they needed to be celebrated, not just during that 1 week of the year, but every week of the year. And then I followed up with one called Values of the African American Family. Values of the African American Family. And that was written during a time where there was a lot of discussion about family values. I don't know if you remember that, but you know, the buzz was family value. I'm going, well, we as an African people, we have our family values as well. So I wrote that book, and at the end of each poem, I included a proverb for one of the African groups. So there's a Shona proverb and a Ashanti proverb, and there's a Haitian proverb, even Ethiopian proverb. So just something to amplify the message of the poem. And then the final book I wrote, or the last book I wrote, I don't think it's the final one because I'm working on one now. This is classic Kwanzaa poems, new and selected. So those are the kind of things that I would leave in terms of my legacy to my children and things I share with them, that, you know, that you're important, your mission is important, what you do with your life is important, you're here to make a difference, you're here to make an impact, and you have everything that you need, and it's just a matter of you going forth with what's already given you, the gifts you've already been given that are inside of you.
Johnny Renee, thank you so much. You are a woman of wisdom, and I love you dearly. Thank you for thank you for being my guest today on For the Love of Words, and I hope to see you soon in person.
Well, thank you. I hope to see you soon too, and happy holidays, everybody.
Welcome to For the Love of Words. I'm Priscilla Almquist Olsen, your host, and today we are going to feature a musician who is also the cantor at the local temple here in Easton. And I always pronounce it wrong, Dave Rothman. So it's Shalom?
Chaye Shalom.
Chaye Shalom.
It's a very hard word for even for Jewish people to say.
Is it?
It means life of peace.
Oh, how very significant, especially during these days.
Especially now, absolutely. And
yeah. So, Dave, welcome to the show. So tell me a little bit about your background, where you grew up, influences you had that led you down the musical path.
Well, I grew up in New Jersey, born in a town called Paterson, and grew up in Fairlawn, New Jersey. And I started taking guitar lessons in third grade, and was singing before that because my mother always sang around the house. And my brother is a very good singer too. So we had a musical family. And my best friend, starting in third grade, was taking guitar lessons also. And we had the ambition in third grade that we were gonna start a band together, like the Beatles, be the next Beatles, something like that. And we didn't become the next Beatles, but we did have a band in high school that we played a lot of the Sweet 16 parties and bat mitzvahs in town, and made enough money that we didn't need to get any other jobs through high school.
So your parents and your siblings and your best friends provided the right stimulation growing up to keep you on the musical path. Mm-hmm. And you went on to school. Where'd you go to school?
I went to University of Virginia undergraduate, and I have two master's degrees, a master's of business from University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and from Hebrew University in Jerusalem, which is how I sort of made the transition from working in the business world to working for a temple.
My goodness, and what was your business world job?
I was in advertising in New York City.
Oh my goodness, the rat race.
Mad Men, although much, much less glamorous than Mad Men.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, and so you seemed quite adjusted, and you've adapted very well. You're calm and relaxed and very happy, it seems.
Well, you mean I'm calm and relaxed in this situation? Well, I'm used to speaking in front of people.
Uh-huh.
That's
no, no, I mean from the transition from the mad world of Manhattan and advertising and deadlines and, you know, all the pressure that's put on people in that business.
Yeah. Now I have all the pressure that's put on people in the house of worship business instead, which is still a demanding job, but it's very different when you're doing what you love.
So tell me, what was your, what did you study in Jerusalem?
Jewish education. And it had a very broad Jewish studies component, like Bible and in Jewish literature and Jewish history, and education, pedagogy, how to teach
Great. So are you doing any of that at the local temple here in Southeastern?
Absolutely. I teach kids, I teach adults, all ages as part of my job.
So you're not just a cantor, you're not just the musical component, you're the educational component.
Well, we do have a director of education who's the head of that, and I've never held that position because I wanted to focus on the music more. And music is not just music, it's music for worship and music for education. It's music for a purpose. But I've always been part of the education team. My career went from being in advertising, mainly in New York, to being a Jewish studies teacher in private school. And I did that in Baltimore and then in Newton. And this is my one and only job doing this full-time at a temple, although I've done smaller pieces of the work in other temples.
So tell me, we're going to hear some of your original songs. How do those songs come about? How do they germinate?
That's a really interesting question. So they come from the words and the intention of the prayers. And you know, if you open up a prayer, just like a poem or anything else in a book, it's just lifeless words on a page until they're brought to life by the reader or interpreter bringing themselves to it. And so that's what I have been, when I came to this position, I wanted, there's a lot of wonderful music that already exists that I love and play and sing, but I wanted to bring my own sensibility to it. And one of the things that I didn't find as much as I like was I love rock and roll of my era. And so I write some things. I wrote a whole service that's a rock and roll Shabbat Friday night service that I recorded as a CD that you could find on YouTube or Spotify or Apple Music or whatever your streaming service of choice is.
So the name is David Rothberg.
David Rothberg, Rockin' Shabbat Eve. You could find it. But I also write things in other styles, whatever. I wanted to bring that experience to the temple, so that inspired me to mine my own loves of rock and roll of many different eras for that project. But I also love lots of other kinds of music. I love meditative chant, so I write some things in that style. And I love Israeli Middle Eastern sounding music, so I write a few things in that style. So I'm eclectic, you could say.
Well, that's wonderful. So the parishioners don't know what to expect, and that's wonderful because it creates interest and anticipation, and so your love of music has really come. I mean, were you surprised that you were going to be a cantor and as a full-time occupation?
Yes, I wouldn't have predicted it earlier in my life. I really became interested in a more serious way in religion later in life. I was interested as a child and then had a period where I went away from it and came back when I was about 40. And I had always wanted to be a musician and felt a need to be more practical and take more practical work. And somehow they came together in a way that allowed both to happen in a lovely way.
Did you worship at Chaye Shalom?
That hard word.
Did you? Is that how you became involved with this?
No, I'd actually never been to the temple until I applied for the job there. I saw the job was posted. I was looking, hoping to find a job like that because they don't open very often. There aren't very many of them. And I saw the job posting and I went after it and somehow the stars aligned and I've been there for 14 years.
Oh my goodness. Wow. That's quite a stint. Yeah. And obviously you love it and your congregation does. And I had the distinct pleasure of hearing you perform at a community Thanksgiving service held last month, November, and it was beautiful. And there was a group of men and women who performed also in a choir. Is that a permanent choir in your temple?
Well, we do have a choir, and many of the people who are in the choir that you saw are our temple choir. But that was an intercongregational, interfaith choir. Oh. So we opened it up to all of the churches who attended the service as
really?
Well.
Oh, okay.
And so that was a mixed choir that was very special. It was so much fun working with them.
Yeah, and so you helped get them ready for that moment.
Absolutely. We rehearsed twice.
Wonderful, yeah.
We've got a lot going on musically at the temple. We have, besides our regular services, which are musical, just in terms of my co-leading with my voice and guitar, we've got we have at least one or two major musical events per month in services. Mm-hmm. It's either the rock service that I wrote, or we do a different kind of rock service that is based on well-known songs of the 60s and 70s. We have kind of a meditative sacred chant service that I have some of the choir members, some singers, and some instrumentalists co-lead with me.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining me today on For the Love of Words and For the Love of Music, really. And so you're going to combine those two loves, and we're going to hear you perform, and I'm looking forward to it, and I know it's going to be really unique, unusual, and really magnificent and enjoyable. So get ready, audience, for a spectacular performance.
Well,
stay tuned.
Thanks for having me today. The first piece I'd like to play is called Love That Never Ends. It's a prayer translated into English. The Hebrew prayer is called Ahavat Olam from the evening service. It's about God's never-ending love for us.
Pathways through our lives, you next piece I'd like to play for you is also a prayer. This one is a prayer asking for God's help to return to our best, truest self. It's most associated with the High Holy Days, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, but it's actually a prayer that one could say anytime because we always need to try to be our best. Help us return. The next thing I'd like to play for you is another prayer. This one is called Shelter of the Lord. It's an English interpretive translation of the traditional Hebrew prayer Hashkiveinu, which is a prayer that one says in the evening, asking for God's protection and renewal as we sleep. And I was channeling the Rolling Stones when I wrote this. See if you could hear it.
Wake up.
we're going. Keep an eye on us when there's a storm. Cover up our head with your protection. Last piece I would like to play for you is something not specifically liturgical, but I like to think of it as spiritual. I wrote it at a time when the world seemed very difficult and dark and it was hard to see a way forward. Kind of like now, but it was not written recently. But I found that every time such a time in personal life or public life reappears, as it seems to unfortunately be doing, this song still seems to fit. It's called There's a Light.
know it, but I can't see it yet, see it yet, see it yet. And it will lend a hand to one another. We'll shine the light ourselves. Oh yeah, we'll shine the light ourselves, ourselves, ourselves. Oh, we'll shine the light.
Thank you very much for having me.